For WILL, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is Mid-American Gardener, where we'd love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. Sandy Mason, host of our beloved MAG TV show, was scheduled to sit down with me today, but alas, she, like many others around here at this time of year, is feeling under the weather. But never fear, she'll be back in to speak with me soon about anything green and growing. Except, as she says in her own words, not the mold in her refrigerator. What better person to jump into the hot seat today, though, than our very own Lisa Brultz, Director of Content and Strategic Communications for TV and Video Production at WILL, as well as Executive Producer of this very podcast. She's also a garden whiz, I've found out. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming in. It is fabulous. And, you know, today started out amazing for me, anyway. Mm-hmm. I went for a walk this morning with Henry, and I heard the most beautiful bird song. It was like, this is the first day of spring, as far as I'm concerned. And that is probably my favorite thing about spring. What's your favorite thing about this time of year?
You know, it's interesting you'd bring up the birds because it was probably about 10 days ago that I noticed that the cardinal had shifted its song from the sound that it makes in the winter, which is more of a chipping noise. You don't really hear a song. It just makes a sort of a pip-pip noise, high-pitched pip noise. You see them a lot. You see cardinals
right
everywhere in the wintertime. But somewhere around this time of year, sometime maybe after the middle of February, you start hearing the song that they're singing now, which I'm not going to imitate here. But it's definitely like, to me, that is the sound of spring. The sound of robins returning, that is the sound of spring. Hearing the house finches who are now making themselves known, those are, to me, the sounds of spring, even more so than seeing green things popping out of the ground, which we're seeing now. It's hearing the birds. I'm really tuned into that part of the environment. And so I would say the birds for me are the biggest harbinger of spring.
And now I'm even more in awe because bird song is something that I wish there was. I think there are, but I always wanted an app. So that, because I hear birds, but mm-hmm. you can never actually see them.
Yes, yes, and there are apps for that. You can play. Cornell University might have their Department of Ornithology is really good. So they have apps where you can be like, I saw a purple bird with brown markings, and it was making this sound, and you can hear the sound and be like, yes, that's the bird.
Now, but what about though if you don't see the bird?
Mm-hmm.
But you hear a song.
Right.
How is there something to actually put it up like a Shazam?
Like Shazam. Exactly.
Yes,
Shazam for birds. And I've actually wondered about that myself. And there probably is something like that. But there is something really fun about going through a website that offers bird calls or bird song. If you're familiar at all with any of the birds in the Midwest and a simple field, there are very basic like field guides for Illinois or the Midwest where you can look at the different kinds of birds and see when they're here. Some birds are here all year. They just don't make certain sound. They don't sing all year. But then you can also see birds that migrate through Illinois using these field guides. And then you can look them up on the apps and start playing the bird song. And then you can be like, oh, that's a chickadee. Like, I'm waiting for them to come back.
They're the little guys, right?
They're small and they have a very distinct high-pitched song. And that will be like the second coming of spring for me is when I hear them. So, yeah, I love birds. I spend a lot of time outside in my yard and am very tuned in to the bird life in my neighborhood.
What are you doing in your garden right now?
Well, right now I'm not doing a whole lot outside, although so this past weekend it was raining a little bit. So between raindrops, I went out and checked on the compost pile, see how everything's going, turned it over a little bit, and it's full of little red wiggler worms. So that's good. We want lots of worms. One thing I did notice, and I was absolutely flabbergasted, is the garlic I planted last fall is up. It's up through the straw, which means it has grown through, like, several inches of straw. Like, I think now that the melted snow and rain have sort of matted it down a little bit, but it's still probably 7 or 8 inches of straw in the garden. It's up. And I don't think I've seen it this early in several years. And I'm very excited. That means that it's healthy and it survived and it's growing. So that was pretty exciting. What else did I see? I noticed that surprise lilies daffodils, some of the other early bulbs are starting to come up. I saw daylilies. What else did I see? Oh, iris. Those things in my yard are starting to come back. Chives are up. So the really early spring.
You've got a whole lot of, like, a little buffet going on.
Yeah, there's a lot. And so I have a little kitchen herb garden right outside my back door. And so the oregano pretty much tried to survive the winter. I expect the sage will be back shortly, but the chives are up. And one other thing that I did notice, though, is that while I'm grateful that we did incredible garden cleanup last fall, there's still a lot to do. So I'll be on a little spring break trip for a while, but when I come back, I'll have lots going on. So that's what's happening outside. I am starting a bunch of plants indoors, so there's an indoor component to my gardening, too, right now.
Oh, well, you know what? We had a question on our voicemail system that you might be able to answer that I believe starts indoors.
Okay.
Yes, my name is Bobby, and I live in Chicago, and I wanted to start some seedlings, and I was wondering if I could plant them, like, in glass jars. I wonder if that's the option for planting seedlings. Okay, thank you.
So the short answer would be probably not glass jars because of the lack of drainage. You're going to need a little bit of drainage. And it also really depends on the types of seeds that she wants to start. So typically the sorts of seeds that you would start under lights in your basement would be things like herbs like basil, parsley, those kinds of things, peppers, tomatoes. Those are really basic. And I also start a lot of like flower seeds so that I can get like zinnias, for example, or straw flower. If you want early bloom, you can start those indoors and then transplant them outside. But drainage is really important. So what I do to start seeds indoors is I have some very basic fluorescent like long tube lights or like 4 feet long. They don't have to be special garden lights. You can just use a regular fluorescent bulb or set of bulbs. They're just like shop lights that you would have like at a workbench in the basement. And then you can go to your local big box store or garden store, and you'll be able to buy seed trays for not very much. You know, you'll get like, you could buy one seed tray, would probably have 72 plugs or 72 places where you could put seeds. But they have drainage holes in the bottom. It's just black plastic. You would also buy like a special seedling mix. So not just regular dirt, but buy a special seedling mix. Get that moist, put it into the plugs, and then plant your seeds in there. Make sure you label everything so you know what you planted where, because at first everything starts to come up. It all kind of looks the same. Or if you plant different varieties of tomato or pepper, you're going to want to know which is which. And just make sure that they don't get too water. They're sort of like Goldilocks. They like things just right. They don't want to get too dry. They don't want to be too wet or else they won't sprout, or you'll start getting like this green moldy stuff on the top. So it's important, though, that they have drainage, that there does need to be drainage. So a glass jar might not be the best idea.
Okay. Well, hopefully that has given Bob some help.
Yeah.
There.
Thanks for your question. I mean, that's what I do. And I've had some pretty good success. I would say the hardest thing, the easiest thing to sprout are herbs and tomatoes. Peppers like things a little bit warmer, so if your basement is cold, they might not sprout as quickly. And then the most difficult thing for me has been herbs like lavender and rosemary, where they can take 4 weeks before you even see a seedling.
Okay. Now, speaking of lavender, I planted some last year, some small plants.
Okay.
And I found out while watching Mid-American Gardener that I perhaps shouldn't have planted them where one of the downspouts goes.
Oh, sure.
That they like dry and they're very drought tolerant. So I'm thinking of literally digging them up and moving them to a drier spot. Is this a good time to do it now?
I would say yes. If you get a nice warm day, the ground isn't frozen anymore probably to down to where they are. So you could transplant them. Just make sure that you're moving them to a drier spot. I would make sure. And that's kind of the hard thing this time of year because it's raining quite a bit. You need to give the soil some time to dry out a little bit, I think, before I would do that. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with you know, moving them right now. It's probably not it's not ideal. Like a lot of times in the fall, we're moving things around or dividing things. But, you know, and if my philosophy is always like, if you kill it, you can get another plant and just start again. you know? I mean, that's the thing about gardening is, and like I'm like everybody listening, I'm not an expert. You know, I've been gardening for 20 years. I still fail epically almost every year at least one thing. And it's okay to have something not work out like that. So if you transplanted a plant and it just was like, oh, my God, I did not like being moved, you know, then you can, you know, go to the Herb Society sale or one of the many plant sales that we'll have in May around here in the spring and buy yourself a new lavender plant. Okay. I'm actually waiting to see what comes back from last year. I planted stuff in all kinds of weird places in my yard last year. So I'm waiting to see, like, what actually survived the winter.
Okay.
And I would like to remind everybody that even though it has been pretty nice outside, it's not spring yet. We are in meteorological spring, but we're not in astronomical spring. And we're recording this on Tuesday. There was crazy snow outside of my window. We're going to be down into the low 20s the next couple of nights, temperature-wise. So it's not – I know everybody's anxious to get outside, but it's not spring yet. We've still got a little bit of winter left. So
oh, you've
I know.
Just taken away my buzz.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a buzzkill, but what that does give you is a little more time to do some reading, a little more time to do some preparation, time to start those seeds. If that's something that you're thinking of doing, now is probably the best time, because one thing that will happen as you, especially if you do a lot of seeds, like I'll do two trays of 72, that's a lot of plants. And then as they grow, they need to be transplanted out of those little plugs and into, I use old yogurt cups with holes poked in the bottom, but they start taking up a lot of room. And so now is a really good time to start, because certain plants you might be able to take outside once they get to a certain size and harden them off, you mm-hmm. know, let them be outside for a little while and then plant them. I wouldn't put my tomatoes out super early unless we're in 80 degree weather every day in April or something. But, you know, so now is a good time to start planning for the outdoors rather than trying to do all that work outdoors, because we've still got some winter left, I think.
So I actually read somewhere today that the average last frost day is in May.
It's in May. And I think that's probably going to change. I think for our zone, things have been changing gradually just as the climate has been changing. But a lot of the standard saying here that I've always heard is don't put out your tomatoes until after Mother's Day, which is like right around the first weekend in May-ish, right around there. There have been years I've planted tomatoes as early as the first week of April. Mm-hmm. I planted them as late as the Mother's Day weekend. Either way, you're still going to get tomatoes right about the same time. And there is always a chance of a killing frost here in April. That has happened before, even when the weather has been warm. Putting your tomatoes out, it's a risky business. And I would definitely make sure if you do put them out in April, if the weather holds, make sure that you cover them if there's any sort of even anything close to the freezing point in temperature, because, you know, there are climate cold spots in people's yards and stuff. And if you don't cover them, you run the risk of killing the plant.
We did listen to one message. I had got several voicemails, which is great. I'm going to be covering those with Sandy and other panelists in the not too distant future. We had a wide range of questions, actually, from
That's
chipmunks
great.
To blueberry brushes. Gardenias,
awesome.
That's it. I mean, there's a lot. So as a reminder, the voicemail number is 217-300-8224. Leave us a message with your question, and it may be included on a future podcast or TV episode. And of course, you can always email us at yourgarden@gmail.com or reach us through Facebook by searching for Mid-American Gardener. Gardening books, Lisa. Favorites.
Yeah, well, so it depends on if you want to be educated or if you want to be inspired. And so I actually have I really like farmer's almanacs. Mm-hmm. I think those are great. There are many, many different types of farmer's almanacs. There are everything from people who like to plant by the moon style farmer's almanacs. That's usually
really?
Included in almost any farmer's almanac. It'll tell you when the full moons are and when the moon is waxing and when it's waning, because some people like to plant by the phases of the moon, which I think is really interesting. Some almanacs lean more in that direction. Others make sure you know the phases of the moon, but they don't, you know, tell you what to do. They're just letting you know when that's happening. But I do love farmers' almanacs quite a bit. I've read a lot about permaculture. There's a book called The One Straw Revolution that is really good, because I like I like the idea of, even though I start a lot of seeds and cultivate a lot, I do like this idea of food doing all of the work or plants doing all the work, perennials, perennial food like asparagus or berries or things like that. And permaculture is, it kind of goes into a lot of that. So that's another really inspiring book that has a little bit of education in addition to the inspiration. I'm trying to think of a couple of my other favorites. I love all the books about like backyard homesteading. That was a huge thing a few years ago. Everybody and their brother, it seemed like, was writing a book about backyard homesteading. And there, Carla Emery wrote like this massive, gigantic book about backyard homesteading. So it wasn't just growing gardens, but it was also chickens and building, you know, solar cookers. And it was from the 70s, but it's this huge compendium of information that I really like. And I, you know, we'll provide a link to that in the show notes for this, because, and a couple other books too that I think people should read, because spending your time in the winter looking at seed catalogs and reading about being outside and being in the garden and learning how to do things yourself and that kind of empowerment is something that's always really inspired me. And that's why I started gardening. I started gardening by reading first. I had a friend who mentored me through a lot of learning how to do the actual stuff. But really, my very first experience gardening was through reading and looking at pictures and getting to know the plants in my yard, understanding like what was growing, you know, there, what, even tree identification or bird identification, and just really getting sort of into the environment itself. Books like Carla Emery's homesteading book really are sort of, it's sort of like the whole package. So
with you mentioning that, it brought to mind, there used to be an English comedy show in the 70s, it would have been. So it's probably around the same time, but it was called The Good Life.
Oh,
starring
yes.
Felicity Kendall. And they had their own garden and animals and everything, and it was hilarious.
Well, that is based on books called The Good Life by Helen and Scott Nearing, who were famous homesteaders here in the United States back in the day. Or they're related, I'm sure. And I also want to mention from England, John Seymour is another guy who wrote, like, you know, books from the 70s, like Complete, how you can be a self-sufficient farmer on 5 acres, but it's all very British. So I'll have to bring them in and show them to you sometime. Because
proper.
Because even, you know, you're not going to be able to do that. Nobody is trying to subsistence farm on their tiny lot in, you know, their raised beds. But it is really inspiring, again, to know that there are these techniques that have been around for millennia that you are continuing to carry out electively, because our food system is set up so that we can get pretty much whatever we want when we want it, if we're lucky and privileged enough to be able to have access to food like that. And so gardening is now a leisure activity. It's not something we have to do, but it is really inspiring to look at these books and just see that, you know, there are people out there who are really dedicated to being as self-sufficient as possible. And John Seymour was a British guy, super, super into that. And he always had the best little illustrations in his books. I'll have to show them to you. So, yeah, we'll provide a link to that too.
Do you have any animals in your garden?
Not currently. I mean, apart from squirrels and voles and all the other creatures that everybody has problems with. We have a possum in the neighborhood. His name is Perry Possum. And we've had foxes and other things in our neighborhood. Lots of birds. I used to have chickens. I had chickens about 10 years ago when I was home more. I was not working full time, so I could be a really good steward of the birds. And I did learn a lot from watching chickens. They would eat lots of insects. You know, I'd find grubs or tomato hornworms. They used to fight each other over those. I'd throw weeds in the garden and they would, or from the garden into their coop wherever they, you know, where they were staying. And they would go crazy over those. And now a lot of my neighbors have chickens, so I just throw the weeds over the fence with their permission, of course. So every so often you'll see a chicken perching on the fence between houses. So I like to pretend they're mine because, you know, I live in Southeast Urbana and not everybody has a fence. And so, you know, I like to pretend that the birds are there. They are great gardening companions. They do tend to eat a lot of things that you might not want them to eat. So mine lived in a coop most of the time because I didn't want them eating my garden. But I fed them well.
Happy chickens.
Yes.
Well, I can't believe how quickly this time has gone. We have run, but talking of animals
yes.
and critters,
uh-huh.
if you were a critter, what would you be and why?
That's an interesting question. I hadn't really thought of that. And I have to say that because in Urbana-Champaign there has been such interest in backyard chickens, I think I'd be a chicken. I think I would like to be a chicken for lots of reasons. So when I had chickens, they were all named after awesome women. So like I had a chicken named Julia Child. I had a chicken named Betty Friedan. You know, they were all named after these like famous, powerful, cool women. And they're just so my favorites are Buff Orpington. So I'd probably be a big Buff Orpington. Ooh. With like tawny feathers and a nice red comb, a little bit bigger. We also had a speckled Sussex and she was cute, but like the Buff.
Check you out knowing all these.
The
names.
Buffs were beautiful. And there's a lavender Orpington. So there's a tinge of purple to their feathers. I think I'd actually be a lavender Orpington chicken in Urbana because I love Urbana. That's where I live. So that's if I could be a critter, that's what I'd be.
That sounds perfect. So thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you.
Down the corridor.
Thank you for having me. And thank you to everyone who's listening, for subscribing to the podcast, for downloading the podcast, for listening to it on your computer. I know I'm not one of those garden experts that's on the show, but I'm very garden positive and I'm always experimenting. And I'm just like you guys. There are times when I don't know what I'm doing and I'm full of questions. And so keep them coming. We'll try to provide as many answers as possible. And I'm happy to just chat gardening if anybody wants to commiserate over what's happening.
And where can we download and listen to this podcast?
The podcast is available online at our website, so you can stream anytime from your device or from your desktop computer, your laptop. But it's also available in iTunes, Stitcher, and on NPR One.
Perfect. Thank you, listeners, to you for joining us for our third episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was my guest today, Lisa Braltz.
Yay!
Send us your questions via email, Facebook, or leave us a voicemail at 217-300-8224. We love hearing from you. I'll be back soon with another lover of anything green and growing. Until then, happy gardening. Mm-hmm.